Have you ever come across a strange story, weird history, odd tale that made you scratch your head and say, hey, I'd like to know a little bit more about that? Well, you're in luck, and you're in the right place listening to the right podcast, because this is the story of... And welcome back to the next episode of the Story of Podcast, where each week we choose a historical topic, we research it individually, we share nothing with each other, we meet back up to discuss what we have found, and that is the episode that you are listening to right now. I am Smith.
I'm Mike.
I'm Joe.
And we don't really need an introduction for our other guy. He is the host of the With Jay Burke Show, a friend and basically family member of the show, Jay Burke. What's up, dude? How are you?
Nothing. I'm doing well. I think this is... I'm trying to think how many times I've been here now.
We don't even keep track anymore, dude. It's just...
Is it four or is it...
I think it's more than that.
I think it's that. I think it's more than that. I think it's might be five, actually.
Yeah, five or six. Well, if you count...
Yeah, five or six.
Crashes that I've done, it's probably... Six
crashes and then the lost episodes, the lost tapes.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Lost years. Yeah.
So I technically have two lost ones with you.
Yeah, actually, we're not going to talk about that.
One day,
it's amazing.
Never happened.
World wasn't ready for that calendar change. I'm just telling you, too soon.
We got to wait about another year so it's still fresh again. So. Yeah. All right. So this episode, you know, we were just kind of talking a little bit before we started recording. This one left me in a glass booth of emotion, and it really kind of messed my head up a little bit. And so this week we're talking about the Mole People of New York City, and that is not a comic book. That is not the villains of a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie. It's like legit. Real shit, if you are not familiar with it. And so let's just get right in and talk about it. Mike, this was your baby, so lead us in, buddy. You know, start us off.
All right. So I mean, this topic was given to me by someone that's very close and dear to me. And I was just like, is this really like a topic? And she was like, yeah. She's like, you should really check it out. And I said, all right. And then we just started deep diving all this and just learning about a lot of stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to go with it. And I was even discussing it with them before. I said, I don't know how to approach this topic because it's a serious topic. And yet the fact that it's one of those things that we all know is out there and we don't really talk about. And that's the homelessness problem that is in this country. And the fact that there's so many people that are left outside in the freezing cold in the winter or living in slums and living in unlivable conditions. I think it's something that, you know, we started to research this topic and you start to find out that an alternative place of being out on the street was living underground. Living in old abandoned tunnels that at first you're like, this is interesting. And then it just starts getting really dark and you're like, this is really some difficult stuff to really think about and think that there are people that are living like this and probably more now today than what's actually what we know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, I definitely came across where the numbers that I came across were around 2000, but There is a lot of speculation that it's quite a bit higher, you know, a lot of it.
That's
higher.
Just New York City. That's just NYC. Yeah,
there is you know, quote unquote mole people of Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, all over the country, and it's really crazy. Do you guys mind if I just start with a little bit of context? Is that all right?
Go for it. Yeah, explain what it is, and like, because I really didn't know what it was either until I looked into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So. The Mole People stories, they are grounded in like a very, very real stories and people in New York City. And it starts mainly in the 70s and the 80s. And they're trying to find adequate shelter. And they find this one place in the Riverside Tunnel that was closed by Amtrak in 1980. And it becomes a location for lots and lots of houseless people to find shelter. And at one point, you know, when it first starts off, there's about 50 people that are residing in the area. And they kind of like have these shanty towns within these tunnels down underneath the ground. And they're living in, you know, crude dwellings and tents. And there's like little, like, you know, alcoves built into the side of walls that individuals are living in, or they're living under manholes and just anywhere they can find a space, right? And this tunnel, for many people, becomes more of a safe haven slash community for people who are, again, experiencing homelessness at the same time. And there is a graffiti artist by the name of Chris Freedom Pape. And he starts to use this particular Riverside tunnel to create this beautiful, you know, artwork and murals all over it. And it becomes known as the Freedom Tunnel. And so, right, that is, you know, when you look at the origins of, you know, the mole people in New York City, really like the main mecca place, right? The place that people think about is this place called the Freedom Tunnel. And that's kind of the background behind it. And, you know, it's going to expand. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of miles of abandoned tunnels and abandoned subway stations, abandoned places underneath the city. And you know, there's going to be this mass exodus, essentially, of people from the surface level that are going to move down underneath the streets of one of the busiest cities in the world. I mean, we've all been to New York City. It's crazy busy there. And just imagine that while you're walking on the streets, there's entire communities of people underneath that you wouldn't even ever imagine to be there. So that's essentially the background of the mole people and of what's known as the Freedom Tunnel. So I figure that's a pretty decent enough lead into what we've got. And we'll take it from there. This was very emotional for me doing this research. It was hard at some points. It was difficult. And I battled with a lot of emotions as well, you know. But we'll open it up. Who wants to start us off? Jay, what do you got?
Yeah, so, I mean, just to piggyback off of you, when you first proposed, you know, coming on the show and doing this, it was intriguing at first and like, oh, this is going to be fun to look at. And then as I, like, got into it, I agree with you. Like, the emotions started to just really overtake me. Like, literally people are living under the feet in some of the most, you know, in the richer areas too of New York. Not that New York City has many non-rich areas at this point, but you know, some of it was just like, you know, exactly what you said, right? Like, you're walking and I'm just thinking about all the noises above, like if you were down there. I did come across something that there was a little bit of an issue with this kind of stuff after the Great Depression, but it wasn't as, you know, obviously it wasn't as widespread. I mean, a lot of it comes down to people might have found their way because the winters came in and you're going to go wherever it's warm. But yeah, I was particularly when I was reading about Freedom Tunnel, I mean, that was, it was just like, it was, I did, yeah, it was emotional because it's like they literally just have these people, and some of them are people who just don't want to be part of society or have some kind of mental illness and yeah, and stuff. And yeah, it just kind of makes you almost angry. Like, what are we doing? And then they're like they're trying to kick people out of there. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, just let them stay there. What are they?
What harm are they?
What
doing to society at that point?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's more harm. The only time there's really anything that goes on, as long they warn people like us, don't go. What do they call them? Urban dweller or urban?
Yeah. Urban explorers and
explorers. Yeah, to go in, because you know, it's like somebody walking into your home.
Well, yeah, they want clicks and they want likes on their YouTube videos, and it's actually kind of disturbing, to be honest with you.
I was watching some of those videos and I was like, these people are nuts. And like,
although there is one guy, Eric K. Swanson, who I did reach out to.
I was watching him.
Yeah. Besides the fact that he's got an incredible narration voice, and I mean, Jay, he rivals your voice. but you know, I did reach out to Eric I haven't heard back from him, but if he ever does get back to us, maybe we can do a follow-up episode and talk with him. He does a really nice job, though. You know, he brings quite a bit of humanity into it. And he talks to two guys specifically, Walter and Carlos. Did anybody watch the videos of Walter and Carlos?
I didn't see Walter. Carlos was
interesting.
It shocked me. Like, you know, he basically, just to give background, because all of us know what we're talking about. You know, he obviously finds this guy, Carlos, under like a manhole cover and in one of these little side dwellings or whatever. I mean, that guy had like a studio apartment. I mean, he had
electricity.
He had a computer.
He had a refrigerator and a microwave, and he had everything he needed. He hooked up his own electricity, and this is where I guess Walter as well. Walter, if you get a chance, go to YouTube, check out the Eric K. Swanson videos. There's Carlos and there's Walter, and Carlos was great. Carlos ends up being kicked out by the transit authority, and he does a follow up episode, and he meets Carlos again 10 years later, it's just really really interesting. But if you get a chance, Walter was the one that it was about a 26-minute episode of Walter. Yeah. And did anybody, Mike, did you watch the one with Walter?
I did.
So what were your thoughts? What did you come across?
It was just interesting to hear his story and to see what he's been through. And, you know, at the end when it tells you that he had passed, I was like, oh, man, I'm like. Yeah. I was like, it's so sad.
I read that.
Like,
I wasn't sure if that was the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was hit by a train, which is, you know, it was sad. It made me, but if you look at Walter, and this is where I guess the internal struggle that I had was, Walter was happy. Walter chose that life and wanted that life. And like, here I am feeling bad, but it's like, I feel bad about feeling bad because am I just trying to place societal expectations on Walter? Because he was happy, right? There is this weird kind of dichotomy of you know what I mean? Like, why am I feeling bad for a man that's maybe even be happier than I am in life, right? I mean,
I kind of went through that too. Like, it was
weird.
I went through the same thing. Even watching Carlos. Carlos was like the most optimistic person I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
You know, even when then I felt bad when he caught up with him 10 years later because he kicked him out of his little spot that he had. And I'm like, okay, so now we're going to throw him on the street to live under, like, you know, live in a cardboard box. I mean, what are we doing? If you're not going to do anything for the guy, what the hell? He's not, you know, what's he doing that's so bad in that spot that's not being used? It made me think about it. I'm like, you know, I wonder how many people just like, you know, we all have those days. It's like, I just had enough of this shit. I just want to go crawl somewhere. And I'm like, is that like a lifestyle that shouldn't be looked down upon? Like somebody who just wants solitude.
And I guess that's where I was struggling too. Cause it was like this feeling of like, oh man, I feel bad. But like, again, it was almost kind of like I was looking down. And I had to check myself because why should I look down or feel bad for somebody who's enjoying their life? Because it's not, right, the acceptable kind of life of our society. Mike, what you got? You had your hand up.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, just some context to add to why a lot of these people ended up down under the
good streets. Good. I got some information too. Good.
With the fact that a lot of these people, you know, they'd be in homeless shelters and there'd be a lot of things going on there. There'd be no space for them, no privacy. There was a lot of things with rape going on, drug abuse, crime. So these people were looking just like they couldn't deal with living in those situations any further. And they said, you know what? I'd rather be underground completely alone and by myself than having to live with that. And it created such tight-knit communities in the beginning. And then over time, you know, obviously, you know, the bad element is always going to find its way in. And I'm sure you guys found that a lot that, you know, a lot of these people eventually were, I mean, not eventually were, but they, a lot of people that ended up down there were criminals, people that were really hiding from the law. So mm-hmm. when the cops would go down there and just try to clean these people out, you know, yeah, they'd catch a lot of these bad people, but at the same time, you're also disrupting these little communities that it was a safe haven for them.
Sure.
And it had to be in those places. Yeah. And then yeah. there was one other thing I thought was really interesting, that the fact that, do you know that if you try to go into those tunnels, you will be arrested?
Yeah,
you are not allowed.
Yeah, it's actually illegal to go search them.
Yeah,
even though they're accessible.
I think one of them was like, endangerment, trespassing. Like, there's a couple of different things that they'll hit you on. So, sure. I was like, geez, I'm like, I understand now why people don't go there, or they get to a point of they have no other option but to just hide there.
Oh. Yeah, what were you gonna say?
So, just to piggyback on that. I got really into who lived there, and then the structure of the society. Once I saw that they had like a society with some kind of economy and social structure and a hierarchy, that really fascinated me. So, you know, what I found is you're right. Obviously, criminals are going to hide wherever they can, but it was very diverse. You know, a lot of them came from, they were obviously individuals who had severe hardships, veterans, unemployed, people just escaping abusive situations and stuff like that.
Deinstitutionalized.
Yeah.
Deinstitutionalized movement from the 70s and 80s for sure.
Yeah. And it was just, you know, like they formed these tight-knit communities that sometimes they created their own rules and systems of governance. So some of those roles are like they had food gatherers or lookouts and stuff like that. Like there's a whole community under your feet when you're walking in New York City that you just don't ever think about, you know. And it was crazy. But that's what kind of fascinated me was, but it's like that with anything, right? I mean, a lot of times, I don't know if I want to do this to you guys, but it's like, you know, Donald Trump talking about Mexicans or something, right? Some of them are okay. And I think that's how we judge people. Like, we're looking down on them, but there's so many people who just fell on hard times. Like, not everybody's a criminal or.
Yeah, definitely.
Or as you guys said, just straight out said, you know, like, I'm good. Yeah. Right. So let's back up real quick. So I kind of wanted to look into a little bit like, you know, you had mentioned before, Jay, there was a big spike after the Great Depression, which is pretty, you know, makes perfect sense. It's very logical. One of the ways that they alleviated some of the homelessness in the early 20th century was they created specifically in the cities things called SROs. Did you guys come across that? Are you familiar with what that means?
No.
An SRO is what's called, it's a single room occupancy. Mm. And so what they used to do is they would take old abandoned hotels, they would change, right? They would make these rooms, the old hotel rooms, into little single room apartments that had, you know, like a kitchen, bed, very, very small. And they would have a community bathroom down the hallway that was obviously there from, you know, the hotel. And this was fairly popular and helped to really kind of house a lot of people. And then what started to happen was from about 1955 on, cities started to make laws to kind of restrict the construction of new SROs. And so whatever was there, right? And so going forward, the number of SROs could only shrink because the city was not allowing any more to be created. In the 1970s, we get this this kind of connection. And the media makes a connection. And I'm not saying that there's not a connection between it, but the media really kind of pumps fear into the public about a connection between SROs and violence and poverty and, murder and crime. And certainly there was a lot of that that were associated with SROs. There could have been ways that they could have maybe gone in and helped situations, right? And done some more to help these people out. But instead, what they started to do is they offer tax breaks to landlords to demolish these SROs or convert them into upscale apartments. And they would take 4, 5, 6 of those rooms, knock down the walls and make these giant apartments, right? Or boutique hotels and things like that. In other words, they gentrified the area. And so many of these SROs shut down between 1976 and 1981. All of these gentrification and the incentives and all that stuff, it resulted, according to a CUNY report, in the loss of, quote, nearly 2/3 of all remaining SRO units. And so, you know, that correlates with when we see the rise of the Freedom Tunnel. And we see the rise of the mole people. When the city destroyed all of, right, the low-income housing for a lot of these individuals, they had nowhere to go. Like, what are you going to do? Like, we all know we're from the Northeast, and if you're not familiar with the Northeast, winter in New York City is no joke. People especially routinely, you know, homeless people or people who are experiencing homelessness routinely die on the streets due to the weather and the elements, right? And so, like, by trying to clean up the streets, so to speak, you know, they didn't actually try to offer any sort of solutions. They just kind of knocked all this shit down and just expected these people to vanish.
That's such a media thing, though. Like, you know, to sit there, they always just go like to the surface of it. Yes, there was a spike in crime. Yes, there was a spike in, you know, homelessness on the street. But you took away something from people and caused a desperate situation to become more desperate. And what do you think is going to happen? They never report that part of it, you know, or most 90% won't.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Joe, what do you got?
Just to quickly tie in, like, with the weather part of it in New York City, that, like, I know we're specifically talking about NYC, but this is why there's mole people in Las Vegas, is for the opposite reason. They go underground there because of the oppressive heat in Las Vegas, and underground is cooler there. So it's interesting to see, like, the climate actually affects the areas where this occurs a lot, right? Probably absolutely, in, like, in a temperate climate, this is probably not going to happen as much.
Yeah. There is a large population of people that are experiencing homelessness. I mean, obviously, that's everywhere. But where I am, I'm in the boondocks in North Carolina, and there's quite a bit. And you definitely see it. You see them out. You see these folks out a lot more in the summertime, hanging out right off of exits from the highway. You'll see people, like, they have their own spots that they go panhandling and whatnot. But sure, absolutely, environment will certainly play a role in that for sure. You know, especially like if we're talking about New York City. Yeah, it's you know, it makes sense. Like, you know, if you've ever been to Vegas, it's hot. Vegas is hot. You know, and a New York City winter is brutal. Yeah, it's absolutely brutal.
I was going to just toss in there real quick. I was looking up as we were talking to see if there was any number or figure of how many people actually die of hypothermia each year. And there's no numbers. Because it just goes to show you how much of this group of people that society has forgotten about. Yeah. And they're saying, you know what? People are dying. We don't know. We don't really care. They're not really part of society. So we kind of just not even bother trying to find out. And that's really sad.
They don't even mean enough to be a statistic.
Right.
Like that's sad.
And it tells you, like, we can fix a lot of these problems. And now, one of the things, I don't know if you, Dan, I don't know if you knew about this, but I'm sure Jay and Joe know. During COVID, a lot of the homelessness that was out on the streets, they started taking them and putting them in hotels in New York
City. I read about that.
And then people were all up in arms
pissed.
About it.
Everybody was pissed
about
it.
They were pissed. Why are these people in a hotel? Why are you in a house? Does everyone deserve to sleep on the street? We're in the middle of a pandemic. There's a virus out there that nobody knows what's going to happen. And you want these people living out on the street? These people are going to be the ones that are going to die if they have no protection.
There's an article that I was reading about, came out June 24th, 2021, it's called Curbed. And the article's the headline is, it's time for New York City to bring back SROs. And that's exactly what they're talking about. So yeah. As of January that year, about 200 of the city's 700 hotels were completely closed down. And so federal and state money were appropriated to help nonprofits buy these vacant hotels for conversion into permanent residences, and to get these folks into somewhere where they can just live and have heat and have a bed, you know, and a microwave. And yeah, it's so crazy to think about how many people get angry about that, you know, and it so much of the argument comes, it's my taxes. I don't want to pay taxes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then I don't know what else to tell you, but, you know, as part of, in my opinion, part of the responsibility of living in a civilized society.
The point of taxes, yeah.
Right, is to help the less fortunate. And if my money is going to go to help the less fortunate, I'm okay with that. You know, Mike, what do you got?
I got a better question for you. Why is it that we are all middle class? Why are our taxes going to pay for it? Meanwhile, you have people that are millionaires and billionaires, corporations that are making billions hand over fist, and they say that they quote unquote give back to society. They should be the ones fixing this problem.
Sure.
Why are they throwing it on the middle and lower class to fix this problem? We have plenty of politicians that decide, fuck that, I don't have to pay taxes because they know loopholes and how to get around it. How about they pay their share?
We can stop billionaires from using charity as a way to just a vehicle to make more money. That's what they do with it.
Sure. Did a whole I learned that thing on some guy's podcast, I think.
Yeah,
I did as well. The way to go around it and set up
that
these
was really good, actually.
These yes, the charity accounts that kind of just sit there. And I did. Somebody did a podcast.
I know. I heard somebody. That was very well researched. Probably hurt that guy's head after a while.
You know, when I tell you, though, the whole time I just kept thinking, like, damn, this guy's voice is sexy. God, he's able to take this and just make it sexy. It's impressive. So I came across some stuff. All right. So 26-year-old Tyrone Laster, he spent a year in the tunnel. So I got some quotes from some people. And, you know, they asked him about it. He said they'll scare you. And he said, quote, I generally wouldn't go below the second level of the city's underground maze of tunnels. They say there's more than six. They say there's more than six levels of tunnels underneath. Yeah. And he said, I went down deep once, don't know how far, and saw hundreds of them. They got children and everything. And he said, most of the people who settle into the underground communities aren't mentally disturbed, said Diane Sande. She's the director of Project Reach Out, a city-funded welfare agency that counsels mentally disturbed homeless people on the Upper West Side. They're just communities of people who decide for one reason or another that it's safer to live down there, exactly what we were kind of saying before. And these people, most of the people, they choose to live underground. In the same way that we can't imagine living down there, they can't imagine living up in an apartment, right? And I always say that, too, about, you know, like addiction. You know, when somebody says, oh, why can't you just have one beer, right? If someone can't figure out, they can't mentally understand, well, why can't you just drink one beer? For the alcoholic, the very same notion of, I don't understand how you can just drink one beer doesn't make sense in the brain, right? So it's the same concept there. And then I found an interview with a guy named JC. He was a member of the underground community for quite some time. And he said, people outside value money. We value survival. We take care of each other, which I thought was really, really interesting. And Jay, you might have come across the same one where he talks about there was an organized group of about 145 people. They elected a male. They elected a mayor. They had delegates. They had members whose jobs were to stand in line and get food or panhandle or go shopping, right? But this part, this next quote got me, and it was really hard for me to kind of digest this one. He said, there are no children because once you go down there, you can't be a child anymore. The community includes adults as young as 9 years old. And that was hard because, as we said, you know, just a couple seconds ago, these are communities of people who decide for one reason or another that it's safer to live down there. But, you know, a child doesn't get that decision. Right.
Yeah. I don't think a child is by free will deciding to go down there.
So when you're saying that, you know, there's no children down there because you can't be a child, you have to be adult. Like, that one ripped my heart out as well. Yeah. Right. Where I look at like someone like Walter and Carlos, where it's like, God, you know what? If your idea is fuck society, I'm gonna roll down there, think, yo, go be happy. But then it's like, oh my God, there's kids down there.
That's like some Walking Dead shit, like yeah. a post-apocalyptic. Yeah. Everybody is working. Everyone's part of the society. Like,
yeah. And it hurts my soul because, you know, I mean, we've all got children, right? So obviously as a parent, when you hear any story about children, you know, you put your kid there and you're like, oh my God, I can't imagine my kid going up there. And I'm not coming down on any of the parents at all. I'm just saying the situation that's hard. It's hard. It's a hard pill to swallow for that one, you know? However, you know, they, so cops, when we said the cops go down there and they get people out of there. One of the police officers said sometimes, you know, they send their dogs down, and the cops said, let them explore the area before we go into it ourselves. JC, the guy that was just talking, or the guy that was quoting, you know, he said, that those dogs frequently encounter some very hungry people. And he said, let me put it this way, police dogs don't return. And then one of the transit officials also said, yeah, we've lost a couple of dogs. So it's like, oh my God. So there's a real dark side. So there's this side that's like, hey man, if you want to be free of society, go out and do it. And like, it's kind of like, oh, right, where I talk about that struggle before, but then there's like a real dark side as well to it. And it's like, emotionally, man, it was a hard topic.
It's pure survival. It's pure survival mode. I mean, that's it. You talk about people like choosing to dissociate from society. That's one thing, but when you're talking about stuff like this, this is just human instinctual survival. That's it. As dark and as medieval as that might seem, that's our instinct. We still have that inside of us.
Sure.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Food is food. Like we're, you know, whether it's dog or whatever. I was actually surprised though at how that one with Carlos.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh yeah, I'm very well fed. Did you see that? Yeah. And he was like, oh yeah, there's like restaurants and food stores. They throw out the cans all the time, and they throw out food and
it's like damaged cans. So
he's not wrong. I mean,
it's genius. Well, I think you guys worked at a supermarket too.
We worked at supermarkets. Remember?
Yes, we did.
How much produce got thrown out that was perfectly fine, but it might have just been funny looking or something like that? Like,
yeah. You know, there were a lot of restaurants down in Raleigh that actually will take that produce that is about to get thrown out, and they'll make meals. And the really cool part is, it's for individuals, right, that are experiencing hunger. And people can go in and get a meal, and they can choose. They choose how much money to give. They give what they can, and so they can go in. They can get a meal, and if all they have to give is $5, well, then that's what you give. You know, if all you got is $3, well, then that's what you give, right? You give what you've got, but don't worry, because if you need a meal, eat. You know, and like,
that's really cool.
There's a few of those. There's a lot of those restaurants popping up around here. They're a beautiful thing.
We need more of that. Yeah. We need more of that in society.
I mean, you know, there's ways to combat this if we could just think about another human being, right? And so Carlos, actually, one of those videos that Eric Swanson did, somebody in the comments was like, yo, we need to set this guy up a GoFundMe. So they did. And they reached their goal really, really quickly. And they gave the money to Carlos. And he's got that money. And now, you know, he can afford a nicer, thicker jacket in the winter, because obviously that he was evicted essentially out of his place, you know. So that was really cool on Swanson's part, where he was able to do that, you know. And you know, because like I said, he brought a humanity to his videos, and really, he didn't go to exploit anybody. He didn't do it for clicks or likes. He did it right to go down and talk to these people and just kind of get in their head a little bit, and you know, he gained their trust, and they allowed him into their home. It was just such a good watch. The Walter video was like 26 minutes. And then when they talk about him passing at the end, that was a gut punch. That was hard. You know, that was a difficult one. I mean, this whole topic is nuts. Joe, what you got, man?
Shift gears a little bit.
You
talked about the SROs and then the government intervention and getting rid of them. The modern day equivalent of this, which I don't know the last time you guys were in Manhattan, but I was maybe a few years ago, pre-COVID, and I started noticing these things, and I was like, oh, this is kind of an interesting way of making a park bench and an interesting way of doing this and that.
There
is a new technique that cities are using, and it has an official name. It's called hostile architecture.
Yep.
And the point of it is to prevent, it's essentially to prevent people sitting, because if like you're in a public area, you don't want people sitting, even tourists or whatever. But it's made its way into stopping people like homeless from sleeping on benches, sleeping on sidewalks. They put spikes on sidewalks.
Did you see the spikes? Yes.
Or on steps.
My God.
Things like that. They construct parks and alleyways in a disorienting fashion so that people don't congregate there. You don't want to stay there because it's like too much for your brain to process. So like you walk through it and you don't stay there. Like there are architects who design stuff like this. They design cities this way so that they look nice, they are functional, but people don't actually use the
public facilities. Space.
The public space, yeah.
It's public space.
And I'm like, that is next level psychosis right there. That's like thinking of doing that. Yeah. It's fucking crazy. It's crazy. You make a bench so like you can sit on it, but it's not comfortable, so you don't want to sit on it long enough. Like what?
It's like going to church. You know, like how can we take church and put it into the middle of the city? Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Insane.
Like the evil, you know, the evil meter of that. Yeah. It immediately made me think about the spikes that they put outside of stores and things like that. Now, like, I also understand, too, that if you own a business, you know, it's certainly a difficult thing to maybe have individuals sleeping outside of your business while you're trying to conduct your business. And, you know, I get that to a certain extent. You know, I understand that. But I guess what you're trying to say, Joe, is that you could take that energy and that money, right? And instead of trying to make lives miserable and difficult, why don't we try to help, right? I mean, I don't know. It's
crazy.
It goes back to, you could drag Cartland into this discussion, actually, if you want to get into a little bit more comedy. But, you know, you talked about NIMBY a lot. Not in my backyard.
Yeah, not in my backyard. Absolutely.
That's what it comes down to all over the place. You know, and it was funny because he always talked about that. He said, if rich people figured out how to make money off of homelessness, we'd solve the homelessness crisis like that. Like, if there was money in it, it'd be over in 2 seconds. Yeah. And he also said they need a magazine. That's how anybody who gets a magazine usually gets money. Gets help.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and so, you know, going back to the Freedom Tunnel, 1991, Amtrak decides to reactivate that Riverside Tunnel, and they start evicting everybody and getting them out of there. And so what they actually started to do is they gave some vouchers to some of the people that were living there, and they were able to take those vouchers and use them to go to a shelter or use them to go to somewhere else. You know, I mean, really what a lot of folks did was they just moved into different parts of the tunnels. So when we talk about, you know, the mole people today, they're still there. They may not be in the Riverside Tunnel. They're not in the Freedom Tunnel, but that Freedom Tunnel was really like the one that hit the media the most and was the most famous. But there's hundreds of miles of tunnels and apparently levels of tunnels, which is mind boggling. Yeah,
that's really crazy.
Yeah. I don't know.
Underneath the tracks, I guess you.
I don't know. Yeah, there's got to be tunnels underneath the tracks for maintenance, I would imagine, right? Sewer stuff, things like that, right? That's got to go pretty deep down. And probably, I mean, if you think about it too, you know, earlier renditions of tunnels that maybe were built, you know, in the early 1900s, you know, that are not being used anymore. But there was one guy, like JC was talking about what people look like. And he said they're really ashy. And so, you know, like the further down you get, he said they were really, it was hard to distinguish. Like, in other words, a human being could be right next to a wall and you may not know because their skin really kind of like mimics the color of the wall, whether it just be from soot or whatever it may be. And there was one part where they took a guy all the way up to the level, to the surface. And he was screaming at the top of his lungs that he was going blind from the sun and he had to get back down. I mean, just think about the effects that has on the human body as well. You know,
you adapt to your surroundings, right?
Sure,
I did wonder that a lot about that as far as the snow. It made me think about it. It kind of broke my heart, too. It was talking about, like, if they do, like, people who can read and stuff would use, you know, like, the sewers on the streets, they'd use the little light that comes in to like
sit. Yeah, there. Yeah, I read the same thing. Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. But I was thinking, like, what does it do to you to just hardly ever get to see light? And to go to six levels down means that you never saw light. But they said these people just are, well, I mean, Joe's kind of saying you adapt to whatever your surroundings sure. are. And that's what they did. I mean, effectively, they have amazing survival skills.
Sure.
And you know, as far as trying to move them, like give them vouchers, like how are you going to reintegrate somebody into society sure.
who doesn't want to be in society, right? That's exactly. That's the other part too. It's yeah. We're not talking like about a gulag, right, where somebody is arrested and forced to be down there. We're talking about individuals who are willingly living down, right? You know, I obviously minus the children, but you know what I mean. So it's a little bit different of a story. Like Carlos in his video talks about when they evicted him, they arrested him, and it was like that hurt because it was like you took this man and you arrested him and essentially you took freedom, you took liberty away from this individual that society would label as somebody with nothing, right? And so, you know, like as an appropriate reaction to this man living under a manhole cover, not bothering anybody, was to put that person in jail. It's just heartbreaking. It's, you know, it's just wrong on a lot of levels, you know?
Yeah. 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 Did you happen to come across, I mean, you might be talking about that a little bit, where Amtrak tried to repaint the tunnels. They wanted to make them back to their original style. And I was like, you know, I was like rooting for the guys under the ground. I was like, yeah, ruin that tunnel. Yeah. Said that.
Make your tunnel back.
They would try to get rid of these murals and stuff. Because that's another under something that's overlooked. There's a lot of artistry under there.
Yeah.
From the people. Yeah. And that's sure. kind of how they dealt with certain things. Like there's just these long murals and I've seen some of them, and some of them are beautiful, you know, it's amazing. But yeah, Amtrak was trying to pull this all out effort to get them to their original appearance. And they just stopped at like 91st Street. They were like, forget this.
Like, what was it, like charcoal gray though? Like what were you trying? Like, what's the original color?
I don't know. That's what I was trying to figure out too.
Ugly as shit fucking gray. Yeah. Like what, you know, like. Let's cover up this beautiful art for fucking. I mean, like some graffiti, but like, hey, what you're referring to is like some of the murals. There was one artist who had I don't know how many pages it was, but he would make this giant mural, and he would write essentially like a journal entry into it, and there was like 200 entries all over in these tunnels, and you could be on the subway, and like. You know, zooming past and like, you know, you see like these journal entries all over. It was an incredible idea. Yeah, it was pretty cool. But, you know, like thinking about it too, like we've all taken the subway before. Being in a populated subway platform is sort of unnerving at some times, you know, specifically the time of the day that you're there. Right. Hmm. And I mean, just imagine going just hundreds and hundreds and if not like miles deeper into it is like, holy shit, you know? But there's also stories of like underground train stations and underground buildings that had beautiful mosaics and fountains, right? That, you know, supposedly had been also, you know, commandeered by these communities, which would imagine that, like, that'd be amazing, you know, like that had like this beautiful architecture and stained glass windows that the city doesn't know was there, but you've got these people that are just living there and living in this community. Like that's
a hidden society. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that would feel like The Walking Dead. You're absolutely right. Like that would be some crazy shit.
Yeah. When you first told me about it, I was thinking, what was it? I was thinking of that movie with, Wesley Snipes and Sylvester Stallone.
Demolition Man?
Somebody, yeah, well, there was like an underground.
Yes, there was. Liberation. There was an underground. Yes, there was. Absolutely. The people who refused, they would touch each other and hug each other. Yeah, because you couldn't do that. Yeah, I was just talking about Demolition Man like 2 days ago. Wesley Snipes got the blonde hair.
Yeah. That was a thing for a little while after
you died.
That was cool.
Joe, what did you just say?
Taco Bell, right? Was Taco Bell like was the restaurant in Dumbo?
Why did why did you say it like that?
It was Taco Bell.
Why do you say it like that?
That's how they say it in the movie. We're going to Taco Bell for the move for dinner tonight.
That's how people down here in North Carolina say Taco Bell. They say Taco Bell.
Taco Bell.
Yeah. Taco Bell. I'm like, why is it Taco Bell? Like, what's wrong with you? It's Taco Bell. You know,
do they say aeroplane too?
No, they don't say aeroplane, but you know what they say? They say homeroom. Like, we gotta go to homeroom. I'm like, why are you calling it homeroom?
Stress the second part of the
They're putting the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Yeah.
You know? It's weird. Yeah. It's like you don't go to homeroom, you go to homeroom. Like, and like my wife and I will joke about it all the time. We're like, what, we're gonna have Taco Bell in homeroom? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you people? Like, speak correctly. So when you said it that way, like,
you live down there, not us.
It triggered me. I got triggered, Joe.
So I was at a hardcore show in the city about, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And it's funny you mentioned, I was like, I took the subway to go back to Penn and it was pretty late and I'm in the subway station by myself. And I see this guy walk in, obviously homeless, and just walks right past me, jumps onto the tracks, and just walks into the tunnel.
There you go.
I was just like, what just happened? Like, it was so late for me. I was like, did I just see that happen? Like, and you know how dark the tunnels are. Like, you can't even see it. Like, he walked 2 feet in, he was gone. You couldn't see anything.
Mike, my question for you is, why did you wait 48 minutes into this episode to give us that story?
reminded me when you
I reminded you through Taco Bell that you saw an actual mole person in real life.
I was a good opener, honestly.
Damn, Joe. I mean, the fuck, man. You're the only one in this whole place. You witnessed a mole person and you tell us at the end of the episode. Damn, buddy. Fucking dropped the ball on that one.
We were talking about subway station. I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. I was by myself too, so I had like no record of that.
You don't know if it really happened.
Man.
That was delusional.
It's like we do an episode on like going to the moon. You're like, fuck, you know what? I went to the moon once. Yeah, I forgot about that.
It's like you talk about the surface of the moon and he starts describing it and you're like, what are you talking about? Oh yeah, like when I put my feet on it, it's
been there before.
I did I lost the book, but there was a guy I was reading excerpts from it, and he went in and was like following somebody around. But he was talking about how
was it called Underground? Was it called Underground by Will Hunt?
That was it. I think that was it. Because he was talking about how you don't realize when you're at the platform. You know, you think of the train slows down, and
yes, but how fast it goes.
But he was like, holy shit, like these people are so skilled at evading the train. It's so fast. And he's like, you don't know wind and stuff like that in his face. He really did a great job of describing it.
I have a quote from that. So he says, this is a part on dodging trains in New York City subway tunnels.
Yes.
He says, you register it at first as a subsonic rumble at your feet. And then you hear, or rather you feel, wind, and suddenly there's this blast of light coming behind you. And what you have to do is jump on the catwalk and run down the catwalk and find an emergency alcove where you can hide yourself while a train rushes past. The truth is, you sort of plan for trains passing. What I would do is I would enter the subway tracks and run down the catwalk and kind of hover around the emergency exit alcove and wait for the train to come. And then the train would come and I would still be hidden. And then once the train was gone, I was able to safely continue down the tracks. So, yeah. And I remember
that's exactly the paragraph I was thinking of.
Yeah. He did such a great job describing it. And that, we don't normally get that that experience of a train right inches or feet from your head at full blast, right? Because you, as you said, while we're on a platform, it slows and then you hop on and now you're on it, right? Or it goes past you, and you know what I mean, but not so close, right? So it's the one thing we were taught. You know, I was taught pretty early on when you go into the cities, you get the fuck away from the with that yellow line right on the edge of the platform. Yeah, get away from that yellow line, man. If that train is not stopping, should that train stop? So, all right, guys. Any last thoughts before we wrap it up? What do you guys? Anything you want to throw in there, Mike? Any last thoughts on your baby?
I just hope that this brings some awareness to everybody out there of what's really going on. And, you know, I think that there's more that could be done, not only by us, but by society. And people shouldn't have to live like this.
Yeah.
Unless they want to.
Even at that minute, no one should be living underground. You know, even if they don't want to be part of society, that's fine. Let's get them the appropriate care. Let's get them a place that's safe for them to be in. There's no reason to, even no matter where you go in this country, you're going to find homelessness, and there's no reason for it.
Sure.
There's plenty of excess. There's plenty of space. There's plenty of money that can fix this problem.
I agree.
Fucking capitalism.
Yeah.
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 No, can I blow your minds for a second? You know, we shy away from people living further underground, but it's okay to live in apartments that are super like stories up in the air, right? Isn't that a little weird? I'm sorry. I've been reading a lot of philosophy lately, so.
No, you're right, though.
and it's weird.
Oddly enough.
Why don't we just live on the ground? Everyone live on sea level where we're supposed to live.
The higher up you go, right, the more expensive it is, right? So yeah. It's the quite opposite of, right? It's like literally the end of the spectrum. That's really interesting, right?
So weird.
Well, you know what I did think about, though, and you mentioned it before, like the 70s and 80s, they started noticing this problem. And that's where there's just this huge cultural shift of we went from, I mean, that's probably the end of, you know, FDR's New Deal type of mindset to this weird hyper capitalistic, you know, top down type of thinking.
Especially going into the 80s. Yeah, man, a new day
that's
in America.
What I mean.
Absolutely.
You know, it was your fault if you're. You couldn't be a victim of circumstance anymore. It was your fault, no matter what. And, you know, we're seeing the effects of that.
Yeah. You didn't work hard enough. And if you're homeless, it's your fault. It has nothing to do with the thousands upon thousands of homeless vets that were thrown on the streets after getting home from Vietnam, you know, and be institutionalizing people, right? You know, where you have like Willowbrook, right? We did an episode on Willowbrook and the horrors and atrocities of Willowbrook, and they shut down these these mental institutions and just threw people in the streets, you know. But again, you know, you didn't work hard enough in your life. So
that's a common American problem too, though. We don't just fix it, right? Like it's like it's either we keep it the way it is because, you know, that's just the way it's going to be, or we just fucking destroy it. Totally. There's never like a middle ground to any of this stuff.
Just whether it's law turn a blind eye. Yeah. Turn a blind eye and then and victim blame. And, you know, and that's makes us feel better about ourselves. Like, I have because I work my ass off for it, and you don't because you didn't work. There's a lot of social issues there.
Yeah. I definitely agree with Mike. Like, I just don't think, I don't understand the whole point, like how we could have that issue. And, Why isn't that just sold? All right, if everybody's afraid of homeless people and whatever, then couldn't you sell it as the safest thing to do would be to give people a place to stay and be healthy and happy as they can be, I guess. But you know what I mean? Like, from like a health standpoint and a safety standpoint, wouldn't it be better to protect these people?
Well, I know, but it also brings up that question again, like, and I said it before, if someone is not willing to receive help or not willing to take part in something like that too, then you start to get on, like, you know, there's that line of fascism where, what are you forcing people into camps and things where it's, you know what I'm saying? Like there's a off balance. Well,
yeah. It gets weird because it's usually legally enforced and now you have an issue. I know. So you're right.
It's tough. There's a lot of gray area. Mike, what do you got?
I think what you could also do is you can try to say, hey, listen, this is an alternative.
Right. The third way.
You know, you don't have to live like this. If this is how you're living, let's see what we can do to help you. Let's get these people educated. Let's see what they want to do. Let's help them. Let's give them some safety, some shelter, some food. You know, I think a lot of the times we forget about the fact when people are down at their lowest point, the only thing they need is someone to put their arm around them and say, hey, I'm here for you. It's going to be okay. Sure. You're not alone. We're here to help. And I think you'd get a lot more of a response from people if that was the approach we took instead of shunning them and stepping over them and arresting them. And that doesn't fix the problem. It just doesn't.
I agree. Awesome. Can I just say one quote I love that kind of goes into what you're saying? And it's I think Michael Lewis said it at Princeton in 2012 when he was giving like a what is it, a bachelorette speech or whatever you
want to call it. Yeah. Is that
right? All right. So he said, and I'll try to do this as best as possible. He said, life's outcomes, while not entirely random, have a huge amount of luck baked into them. You owe a debt to the unlucky.
Yeah.
Hmm. And I've always loved that line ever since I heard it.
Yeah. I think that is the best way to close this out, man. Joe, final thoughts, buddy. What do you got?
All good. I think this was a good one.
Yeah, me too. I think, I loved it. Good conversation. Mike, great topic, man.
Good topic, more Mike. Yep. Good one for bringing this up.
Yeah, buddy. Awesome. All right, guys. I think we hit this one pretty hard. And thanks for taking time out of your lives to be on this show. And thanks for taking time out of your lives to listen to the show. We really appreciate it. For all of us here at the Story Of, as well as the With Jay Burke Show, we thank you for listening. Remember, stay you, stay weird, stay out there, and there's more to history than what's in the books. Adios, friends. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of The Story Of. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Podcast Story Of. Don't forget to like and subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is a production of Unfiltered Studios. If you would like to know more about joining Unfiltered Studios, please visit our website at unfpod.com for more information.